Well, this should be interesting. It's the news, according to me. It's Financial Friday here, right here on the show. It's Financial Friday. Yeah. Oh, oh. Hey, it's Friday, April 24th, 8:18 a.m. It's early for me to be this far along on the show. We've got, it's 2026, by the way. And here it is, Friday, April 24th. Financial Friday, we got some things to talk about today. If you notice, my voice is a little bit raspy. Various reasons. Probably the main reasons. I've been doing a lot of singing this week. A lot. Working on stuff. Got a little thing going on this evening. It's kind of my debut for the album that I've done. As well as a few other singles. I'm not gonna do any of the singles. I'll do a few songs off the album this evening. There's a group that I meet with. It's called The Hub, His United Body. It's every other Friday. Well, it's basically the second and fourth Friday of the month, of every month. And they didn't have the meeting last time, but they're kind of slimmed down on some of the meetings. They don't have as many meetings anymore, but they still have them. And it's a lot of other things going on. They try to work around whatever else is happening in the community. But anyway, I usually try to lead worship for it, but however, I've been working most of my weekends, which has been a little bit of a problem. And henceforth, it's a Elizabethan language there for you. It's not been very very easy for me to get to the meetings. I've just happened to be on vacation this week, and they didn't have a speaker and. So we can have more worship time and music time. And then the thought was maybe I could do some of my songs and talk about the story behind some of them. There's not all of them have a story, but some of them do. That's just kind of the overall story, that kind of stuff. I'm going to talk about that. Anyway, enough about that. We got a few things going on here. My cup, for one thing, is just the same as it was yesterday, pretty much, except for some ice situations. But it's always about that ice, isn't it? Nice hot cup of chai there with Cinnabon creamer in it. Now, I also have in my backup cup here, I've got sweet peach tea. It's going to be gone by the end of the day. I had an interesting thing with the ice maker, though, this morning. It was set on regular cubes, but for some reason it was having some trouble. I think something was getting stuck. And ended up pulverizing a couple of the ice cubes. And, of course, that had turned it into, chopped, shredded ice or whatever. And that is not acceptable. Whereas then a whole bunch of ice cubes came out, pretty much filled up half the cup. So I don't have very much tea in here. It's mostly ice. But I got to say, it's cold. That's some cold stuff right there. We have, what happened there? I got something. I probably should put the cover back on that. This dust on things. It's just not. That's not. In fact, what I need to do is I better maybe push this button here. I could be doing all this stuff while I'm off the. But no. Doing it all right here. Let you listen to all this stuff going on. I just need to put this one little mark here on this little page. There we go. I got some other things I got to do. Anyway. What an interesting show so far, huh? Yeah, we have, this is top quality, top shelf stuff here. I'm not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a financial counselor, I'm apparently not much of a pod, I can't even say podcast, let alone be the podcast host. We got this thing, it's what we're going to talk about today, it's interesting, a couple different things. One is I don't know which one of these is the debate and which one's, it doesn't have really any kind of idea here. 3 minutes ago, 7 minutes ago. That must be the first one I started. I'm going to use Notebook LM this morning. We're going to use some AI to have a kind of the podcast within a podcast thing here, since my AI agents or my little AI callers are broken for now. I went into Wikipedia, got some information. You know, you can put websites in. You just put in links and stuff, and it'll go get to that website and get information, whatever it is. So it compiles all that stuff, and it uses only that as a source. So you have to kind of make sure. There's one source I didn't have in there that I should have had in there prior to this, but before I built the thing. But I'm not going to do it again. It's for some reason Notebook LM hangs up when you try to create an audio. It sits there and processes forever until you hit the refresh button on the page, and it finally works. But I've got the desktop app, which seems to be having the most issues. I don't know if there's an update to this thing. Probably is. Anyway, a lot of things happen in the AI world, but that's for Tuesday. We have a couple things happening. We're going to have one is a debate about the International Monetary Fund, the Federal Reserve, and the World Bank, kind of what they are and what they come from, what money is all about. And then we're going to have a little overview of those things, as well as a debate between these two podcast people. And you can jump in and ask questions on what this thing's on, speaking of which. But that's what we're going to do on today's show. So if you get a chance, you can call or text the show. We'll have a number for you here in a little bit. Interesting stuff going on. All kinds of news as well. There's a few things happening. Tim Walz has been out on the warpath again. I'm not sure exactly why. Making some statements that I don't think he realizes how, or maybe he does, how condemning of his running mate, Kamala Harris, he's actually being in terms of some of the things he's said and saying, some of the things he's saying. It's weird that he's out on the campaign trail. There's a guy who's not running again for governor. So what is he going to do? Is he going to run for something else? He's a politician, so he's going to do something. He claims to be a football coach and a school teacher. All this kind of, he's not that. He even when he was doing that as a job, he was over in China most of the time, and we come to find out he had a little girlfriend over there. And of course, that just all got swept under the rug. How is this guy still in the news? How is he still being invited to do anything? Especially on a comedy program, Jimmy Kimmel or whatever. It's just, I don't understand any of that. The Democrats, their heads are flipping off now because they are discovering that there's everything that they did with this Virginia thing is potentially unconstitutional. It's probably going to get the states. Well, there are all kinds of lawsuits being filed all over the place because of the whole thing. One of the worst ones is that they caught him cheating in the referendum, which I told you about that a couple days ago. I said something about that potential that they probably hornswoggled that in. Some nefarious activity there. Then they ended up. We'll see what happens with this. But Joaquin Jeffries is just making some really. This guy doubles down on stupid. I don't understand. He got confronted, of all people, by, I think, MS Now. Somebody on MS Now the other day was confronting him about some numbers or something, and he just kept doubling down on the dump on the economy. And they were like, well, but he's just ridiculous. I'd like to play that clip, but we'll probably get into that next week, unless something else bigger happens. But it's, anyway, we're going to go on with keep it on the financial side of things. But in the meantime, We'll play this little ditty here.
It's the news, it's the news. According to me, oh, it's the news, the news. According to me, it's the news,
it's the news.
According to me, oh, it's the news,
it's the news.
It's the news,
it's the news, yeah.
According to me, it's the news,
it's the news.
According to me, according to me.
It's the news. It's just a nice, happy song to start your day today. And now we'll go into the stuff. We have, this is brought to you by Notebook LM. This is going to be the podcast within the podcast. I don't know what this is going to, we're experiencing this together. I don't know what's going to happen here with regard to what this puts out. I have no idea what kind of output we're going to have. We're going to experience it together and see what we get. So here you go. This is the Who Runs the Global Monetary System? We're going to find out here.
This is the brief on the global monetary system.
It's about a minute
and a half
long.
Money isn't just that paper in your wallet. It's a super dynamic resource managed by three massively powerful organizations that act as the literal plumbing for our entire global economy. First, so who actually creates money? Well, think of the economy like a car engine. While the U.S. Treasury physically prints the gas, the Federal Reserve is the one working the throttle. They control how fast the whole system runs by adjusting interest rates and trading government bonds. Basically, by dictating what private banks charge each other, the Fed controls how much those banks lend out, which effectively speeds up or slows down the actual creation of money.
Did any of you understand any of that? They want it to be confusing on so many levels. They want the whole system to be confusing. The way money is created, the bonds, all that whole thing, it is a little bit complicated. However, it's not. They just make it that way. They make it seem that way. Basically, what it amounts to is they're creating money out of nothing. That's where money comes from. Money is where whatever they say it is, and it all stems from the Federal Reserve, because right now until the petrodollar goes away. But the Federal Reserve and the International Monetary Fund are two hands in the same pocket. We'll get into that.
Second,
more.
What happens when a whole nation goes bankrupt? Enter the International Monetary Fund. Backed by 191 nations, where wealthier countries actually get way more voting power, picture the IMF as a global financial paramedic.
Yeah.
They will absolutely save a country's life when it completely runs out of foreign currency to pay its debts. But listen,
take advantage
that
of
rescue everybody. Comes with some really heavy strings attached.
Yeah, exactly.
They're
going
to force borrowing nations to go on an incredibly strict, painful economic diet before handing over the cash.
Yep.
Finally,
if
the IMF
control.
Is just fixing immediate crises, who's building the foundation for the future? That's the World Bank Group. Instead of emergency rescues, they provide grants and really accessible loans directly to the developing countries. Their whole focus is funding long-term game-changing projects like infrastructure and healthcare to literally end extreme poverty and build shared prosperity. So the Fed creates the liquidity, the IMF stabilizes the crises, and the World Bank funds the future of the global economy.
All right, so the World Bank is tied, and he didn't say any of this, but the World Bank is basically tied to the United Nations. It's mostly considered to be a charitable organization. They help to end world poverty. Okay, they're not doing a very good job. This apparently because the entire world is much better off today than it ever was. The poorest among us are much richer today than they've ever been. In terms of wealth and quality of life, like they say, you know, rising tides raises all ships. It's a standard. Of course, now that when you start to look at the standards, of, you know, between one and the other, there are more millionaires being created. Which you can't. It's this whole thing of. There's a joke I saw the other day, and this kind of reminded me of this story, but there's, you know, that whole thing about you can give a man a fish or you can teach a man a fish. If you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. If you teach a man a fish, you feed him for a lifetime. There's this whole idea that if all you're doing is giving money, throwing money at the situation, you can give a homeless person lots of money and they're still going to be homeless and they're probably not going to get out of their situation. Whatever got them there to begin with, they probably had money at one time. And you know, it's just a matter of idea. Or maybe, you know, just life circumstances happen to them. There are those cases where there's a need for that safety net. But that's not, by and large, that's not the case. It wasn't just that something happened to them. It's that they usually made some choices that were bad. That's typically the case. That's not always, but. And a lot of times those decisions were made based on. Sometimes they're not all there. Now, if we have the whole thing about the World Bank, so the World Bank is touted as this organization that helps to fund things and helps with poverty. They also fund a lot of abortions. They also fund a lot of birth control, what they call women's health issues, which is just, they're known for sterilizing people, funding the sterilization of people. And of course, Mr. Gates is behind a lot of it. He's very heavily involved in the UN stuff, all the little organizations that are spawned around the UN. It's all part of the whole thing there. So anyway, that's the little overview. Now we're going to go to the next one, and we're going to play this one. This should be a little bit longer. I think it should be more than a minute and a half, but this is more of a debate. This is kind of a podcast style thing. So we're going to go into that and see what we have to.
Welcome to the debate. Looking at a massive skyscraper, the shock absorbers deep underground are what keep the building from snapping in a hurricane. Well, what if those same shock absorbers were actively generating the tectonic pressure that causes the earthquakes?
Right.
That's the paradox we're looking at today with Apex Financial Institutions specific.
I don't know what she's talking about. That was kind of a weird analogy, but that's what it came up with. So let's go from there.
The Federal Reserve, the IMF, and the World Bank.
Exactly. Do they function as essential global economic stabilizers, or, do they act as mechanisms of elite control that just exacerbate inequality?
I argue these organizations are indispensable safeguards against financial ruin and really drivers of vital development.
I contend that their structural conditions and market interventions inflict profound systemic harm on vulnerable populations, often masquerading as a cure.
All right. Now, I want to set this up for you so you can understand how this is, why are they are debating the way they are, why they've taken. I put in there, I want to see polar opposites. I want to see the good and the bad parts of these organizations. I want to have a debate over what, are they good or are they bad, basically by presenting the information there. So this is what, that's why you have these two opposing views in this debate. So I kind of set this up. This is why it's. I just kind of gave it that instruction, and that's what it's taken off with. So there you go.
So let's start with the sheer mechanics of a global liquidity crisis. When private markets panic, they freeze. In 2008, when the Fed authorized that $85 billion loan to AIG, it wasn't some charity handout.
Well, it certainly felt like one to the public.
Sure, but they were acting as the clearinghouse for a totally paralyzed system to prevent a domino collapse. Same with the IMF mobilizing $1 trillion during the COVID-19 pandemic. I mean, they are the ultimate lenders of last resort.
But look at the mechanics of how the IMF deploys that capital. It almost always comes with structural adjustment conditions.
Yep.
When a developing nation faces a balance of payments crisis, meaning they literally lack the foreign currency to pay for basic imports, the IMF steps in, yes, but demands strict austerity.
Right, to ensure repayment.
But that's how you get outcomes like a 16.6% spike in tuberculosis deaths in Eastern Europe. They force countries to liquidate public health care just to service foreign debt.
The austerity is brutal. Yes, I agree. But think about the mathematical reality of a balance of payments crisis. You can't fix an insolvency issue by letting a country continue the exact same deficit spending that drained their currency reserves in the first place.
Deficit spending is a highly sterile way to describe funding basic human infrastructure.
I'm just looking at the balance sheet.
But in Argentina in 2001, the IMF's forced budget restrictions literally starved their public sector. It triggered the exact economic collapse the IMF was supposed to prevent.
Yep.
Or look at Tanzania, where assistance was explicitly conditioned on privatizing their water system.
Okay, but that localized pain is sometimes the mathematical cost of correcting a massive macroeconomic imbalance. It's similar to a margin call on a leveraged trading account. The broker in this case, the IMF, isn't forcing you to liquidate assets out of malice.
Right.
They are doing it out of mathematical necessity to satisfy the clearinghouse and prevent a wider contagion.
Wait, that margin call analogy perfectly illustrates my point. A margin call protects the brokerage, not the trader.
Exactly. It protects the system.
But these institutions aren't failing.
They are functioning exactly as designed to protect the global dollar-denominated financial system at the expense of localized sovereignty. I mean, the rules are dictated by a quota system where wealthy nations hold the voting power.
Even if the voting power is skewed, the alternative is just worse. By managing interest rates and injecting liquidity, central banks like the Fed smooth out the destructive boom and bust cycles.
Only because they can't operate without the fiduciary issues, or I should say the fiduciary product of the IMF. In other words, they are in control of all the beans. That's the money system is the problem. It's not just trade, goods for goods. It is, you know, the bartering effect that we'll get into this a little bit later.
Without that massive intervention, a localized banking failure easily becomes a global depression.
Hold on, but if you look at Milton Friedman's critique of the Fed, wasn't the issue that they didn't provide enough liquidity in 1929 worsening the Great Depression? And in the modern era, how exactly does quantitative easing smooth things out for the working class?
By lowering long-term interest rates to spur hiring and capital investment when traditional policy tools are maxed out.
But mechanically, quantitative easing involves the Fed buying up trillions in bonds, which directly inflates asset prices.
Yep.
It prints money that parks itself in stocks and real estate, inflating the net worth of the wealthy while the working class pays the hidden tax of inflation.
Ah, I see what you're getting at.
Right. Whoa. So that's not a stabilizer. That's a massive wealth transfer.
It's a mechanism of stabilization that unfortunately has asymmetric side effects. But without it, the underlying economy seizes up completely.
So says
you. Nobody is hiring if the credit markets are frozen. You have to save the banking architecture first to save the broader economy.
Well, and that's the crux of our disagreement. You see saving the banking architecture as a necessary prerequisite.
Exactly.
I see it as a system that institutionalizes global inequality, demanding austerity from the poorest to ensure Western creditors get paid.
I have to agree with this guy.
Well, despite those deep structural flaws, removing these pillars entirely invites catastrophic bank runs and sovereign defaults. We need a lender of last resort. You know, even if the terms of the loan are harsh.
Unless we fundamentally restructure who writes those terms, the cure will continue to be just as destructive as the disease.
This is clearly a complex architecture with far more to explore regarding global monetary policy. We'll leave it to you, the listener, to weigh the systemic stabilizing benefits against the societal costs.
Yeah, there is a lot to unpack.
Definitely. But the next time you look at a towering skyscraper, ask yourself, are the shock absorbers protecting the people inside or just keeping the penthouse steady while the foundation cracks?
Well, that's just some good stuff right there. The point that the fellow was making, and I think this is at the very end, he really nailed it, I think, in my opinion. The problem is not so much, her perspective was, well, we have to save the global banking system, we would all collapse if we have this world recession, if this one nation, fails. The problem is they step in, World Bank does this too, but the IMF steps in to help, and then they really step into control. It's all about that. Much like a bank lending you money to live beyond your means, They have control over certain things in your life now. First of all, they demand a payment every month. But, of course, they also demand that you have a certain kind of insurance or that you have a certain amount of insurance or whatever you have. And they also demand that you do there's other things they can put demands on in terms of how you will manage because they own the property till you get it paid off. So they can put these stipulations on you. And that just runs the whole gamut of the ball game. So there's all these things, and anybody has a lien on your property or any kind of property you own, whether it's a car, whatever it is, that they own, they have some kind of say in how that car will be taken care of, or how that product or that property will be taken care of. So that's what happens here, and of course the IMF steps in. Now her point was, well, this we have to save the economic system. Well, the economic system is the problem. When did the IMF When was it born? I think it was 1913 is when the Federal Reserve was created, or in the 1913. Right, right. Around first part of the century, last century. Before that, what did we have? Well, we had a bunch of states, everybody had their own money system. It was kind of had their own you know, fiat currencies running around. And the government system was supposed to be based on this, based on silver, actually. But it's like a gold or silver standard, whatever you want to call it. What's weird about this is if you talk to a liberal about this, well, we should go back to a silver standard or a gold standard. And Reagan looked at this, I guess, right before he got shot. And the one thing that they don't understand, well, we're not going to be able to carry enough silver around to pay for everything. That's not what it. The point is that the dollar is pinned to the value of silver. In other words, that dollar will buy you an ounce of silver, whatever it is. It'll buy you that X amount of silver that's there. It's not that you carry silver around with you. Every time I've had a discussion with a leftist, they tend to go down this road, and they're just like, well, how are we supposed to? We're just supposed to carry around a bunch of silver all the time and pay everybody. We're supposed to shave off a certain number of ounces for to buy a candy bar. No. We were on a silver standard at one point. And you still carried around these certificates. They were refundable to buy silver. It was you could exchange it for silver. That was the point. It was like a receipt. Now the banking system still cheated on that one too. They did fractional reserve stuff all the time. But it's this whole idea that you have finances that we have to have this money system. It wasn't always that way. It just people got by and they had trade and everything happened without all that. Now having the kind of lifestyle we have right now would be very difficult without some kind of. In fact, it's very difficult to operate at all without an electronic checking account or some kind of, payment method online payment method of some sort. There are places I go now that will not accept cash, which I think it should be illegal. Personally, it is good for the paying of all debts. And if you walk up to pay a bill and they say, we don't take cash here, well, you're taking it now. There are times there's been places where I've gone where they say we're cashless. We don't take cash here. And I've got a fully operational credit card. And I've done this a couple times. Said, well, all I have is cash. What are you going to do?
Oh, I have to get the manager.
Oh, all of a sudden they can take cash.
Well, our system's just not set up to take cash.
Well, too bad. Because you can't arrest me for not wanting to pay my bill with cash, or not for paying my bill with cash. You can't disallow that. It literally is in most cases. It's not legal to do that. Well, let's put it this way: it's not legal to confront. If you take me to court, let's say I go to your restaurant and I buy a big steak dinner, and it turns out to be it's Ruth Chris or something. It's $120 for one person to eat one steak and mashed potatoes. I don't know why. And you go in there and you get your little two-course, three-course meal, whatever you get, and it's $100-some. And they take you to court, take you to small claims. The court issues that you have to pay that $120. Okay. I'll pay it with cash. And guess what? The court has to take it. So now they're going to get paid with cash. Now, I don't know if they're going to pay the restaurant with cash or not. But like, from the very beginning, you were willing to pay with cash and they wouldn't take it. So, I just had a text message. What was that about? You're tripling your donations. Oh, that's something else. We're not going to do that. I thought there was something about five star. Anyway, that's what happens in this situation. And it gets ridiculous with the money system that we have. And right now, the dollar is pinned to oil, to the cost, to the price of oil. So it's the federal, or at least our dollars, our U.S. dollars, are pinned to the price of oil because almost all oil in the world. Now there's this thing called the BRICS accord, whatever you're going to call it, the BRICS countries that are they're working against. They're basically trading oil outside the U.S. dollar, which is a problem if it becomes if everybody starts doing it. That's going to be the problem. That could end up being an issue. However, there are some things behind the scenes that people don't talk about. And the reason, why is it that it's pinned to the U.S. dollar? Well, it's because of the IMF. The IMF still controls all other, the yen, all everything. When you do trade, when a country does trade via the international funding, it all leads back to oil. And what I've always said, our entire economy is based on, it's an oil-based economy. This is why. Mostly because everything we depend on somehow is tied to oil, whether it's the rubber tires that are moved in the truck that brings the stuff to your community, or if it's the fuel that the trucks burn to get those products and goods and services into and out of your community. Whether you manufacture something in your community and then you ship it out, or whether you're buying and consuming things and you're shipping them in, there's massive amounts of trucks moving things around every day from city to city, and from, you know, the lawnmowers that are made out in Iowa might be the, you know, on a truck coming to you, and you've got something you build at your store or whatever, your shop, furniture, whatever it is, or an RV, whatever what kind of product it is. And that gets shipped out. And it's this entire, you know, this continuous back and forth thing that's going on. It's just, you know, one city might be productive in one thing. Whenever I go to a city, especially when I go to, if I get an Uber ride or something like that, van driver to the hotel, whatever it is. A lot of times, if I'm in a position where I can actually talk to the driver or talk to a local person there, I'll say, What's the big industry here in town? What's the city known for? And there's typically something. You know, sometimes it's farming, sometimes it's grain, sometimes, you know, there's like big feed mills. It get out in certain parts of the world, especially in Iowa and places like that. There's Kansas, you know, what's the big industry here in town? What's the big thing that everybody works for? Now you go down to Northwest Arkansas. That's the name of the place, Northwest Arkansas. It's the name of the airport. A lot of little towns around that area, like Springdale and a couple others. And the big thing there is that's where the Walmart is. That's where Walmart's basically main warehousing structure office system is. That's where they all their training is done there, or a lot of their training is done there. So that's why. They're known for their Walmart. Walmart is there. Now, whenever you have a Walmart, or whenever you have a big industry like that, there are other industries that form around it. I shouldn't say industries. Other businesses form around it. You have to have employees. Say they employ 1,500 people there. Whatever it is. I'm just making up a number. I have no idea. Say they employ 1,500 people. Well, those 1,500 people have to have cars. They have to burn gas to get back and forth to work. They have to have groceries. They have to have a place to live that's within a reasonable amount of area. You have to have schools there for their teach their kids. You have to have, you know, drug stores for their medicine, doctors and hospitals for take care of their medical care. You have to have in the hospital and all those businesses, all those support industries also have to have suppliers and things that happen as well. So they have to have things shipped in. It's this whole economic balance that happens. It's interesting because we were just talking to somebody about this the other night. Talking about a church that's kind of, you have to reach a critical mass point. There's whenever you plant a church, some big churches plant churches. They're not planting it. It's kind of weird the way they plant churches. They'll take 120 people and plant a church somewhere. That to me is, that's not a church plant. That's just you. That's a church. When I grew up, 80 or 90 people in the service was typical. That was normal. That was kind of we didn't have mega churches back then. It was just a bunch of families in the community got together at the same church. And that was, you know, we drove 5 miles to get to our church, and still, you know, it was only 80 people there, 90 people, I think it was, the attendance. Occasionally we got 100. But it was, that's just what I grew up in. Of course, the whole town had 365 houses. So it's kind of a, in the little town I was in. So it was, it wasn't a big area. It was a big farm community. So anyway, the point here is that there's a critical mass point, and the economic, or the, I should say, the organism itself, the organization, organically needs, you need to have about 55 to 60 people. And there's a number of families you have to have too, because what ends up happening is at some point you have to have childcare. If you don't have childcare, you're not going to get young, young families. You're not going to get those in there. They go in, they go to the service, and there's no childcare. There's no, I had to have the kids with me the whole time, and there wasn't like a Sunday school thing or any kind of childcare during the service. That's a problem. And until you have a certain number of people there, who have people who are able to do that for you, you end up with, it's a problem, because you got kids there who are disrupting the service or whatever they're doing. You know what kids do. And so this is this runs into that. Then you can't, people come in and visit and they leave and they never come back because there's nothing for the kids. Now, there's some places you go to and they kind of creep you out because there is something for the kids, and it kind of creeps you out. But that's a whole ballgame. But so there's this critical mass point where you have to have a certain number of people to balance everything out, kind of the economy of social activity. There's kind of this balance that has to happen. The same thing happens with economies in general. When they started saying back during COVID, if you remember, back during COVID, they had this whole thing going on with, well, we have to eliminate unessential workers. Unessential jobs are going to shut down. Places are going to shut down. Unessential workers are not going to be needed. We only need essential workers. So, about, 60% of our population was told that they were unessential all of a sudden. They don't see their job as unessential. Well, to them, their job was essential. To me, I might sell hot dogs on a street corner. That's an essential job to me. But that was shut down. You're not essential. You're not an essential worker. Well, come to find out, the guys who are essential workers needed that hot dog guy to feed them lunch every day. That's where they were eating lunch, three times a week. Now that guy's gone. Now what am I going to do? Now I got to go to the grocery store more. I can't go to the mom and pop grocery store. I can only go to the big Walmart store because they can stay open. But the mom and pop place can't. Why? I don't know. There's so many things we did during that time were so backwards from what it should have been. But it's just, and of course there were states that didn't shut down and they did fine. They didn't have any bigger numbers than anybody else. I mean, there were spikes. Everybody had states that spiked, which was again a centralized, because New York was having issues. They were spiking at the time. Everybody else in the country had to shut down. Places in Wyoming didn't even been touched yet. And we just thought we were going to get past it and get over it. That was just not going to happen. It's like saying we can cure the common cold if everybody stays home for 2 weeks. It doesn't happen. It doesn't work that way. So there's, because there's something called reserves. It's just something called, the rhinovirus is everywhere. It's weird. It's just weird the way they acted during this whole thing. There's so many things being said, and you had Anthony Fauci out there in the nasal pharynx. Well, the just so much, and then changing. Oh no one should be wearing masks. No one needs to be walking around wearing masks right now. That's ridiculous. Oh yeah, maybe wear one mask. Maybe two. Well, even two would be another layer. Maybe wear two masks. I mean, that's the evolution of the way things went. Well, the only reason I said that was because the essential workers needed the masks. So you lied to us then for a reason. Are you lying to us now for a reason? Or is that what can we trust coming out of your mouth? That's where I really have the issue. It's I get mad when people, why didn't you just say masks aren't as important right now because we're trying to save those for the, we're trying to keep, why didn't you just come out and just say that? Well, the reason is because he was lying at the time. He was actually telling you the truth the first time. Masks weren't that effective. But then, of course, then he had to go along with the crowd and say that masks, everybody has to wear a mask. Oh, but it was a, can you quantify how effective they were? Nobody can. In fact, the studies that were done were kept under they basically were thrown under the rug because they didn't prove anything. In fact, one study proved it was worse. There wasn't even a 1% gain by wearing the masks to stop COVID. If they would have been, it would have been stopped because everybody was wearing them. As well as the whole vaccine thing, which was, again, is another thing where and Adam Carolla just talked about this the other day. He said, you know, so your family, you got the shot. Your kids got the shot to protect you. You got the shot to protect you. Now you want me to get the shot. You're telling me I have to get the shot, even though you got the shot to protect yourself. Now I've got to get the shot somehow. Somehow that protects you. It's the whole thing with JP Reacts, which, by the way, JP Reacts, he's gone off a deep end as well. There's several people here who've kind of gone down this road, and it's Tucker Carlson now. In fact, what was the guy's name? I probably should play this. It's just, I was kind of appalled by some of the things that, I don't want to get rid of that one. Yeah, not that one either. Well, all these are too important here. Get these. Claude gets dumber the more you use it. That is true. Let's go here. We'll go to history because I know that. Yeah, here we go. I just played this. What are you doing? There we go. Let's go back to history again. Okay, that's history. Yeah, I just played this morning. it was pretty. Here it is. This is it. I'm going to play this because it's really important. This is Nick Freitas, I think is his name. I think he's a congressman. And he talks about Tucker Carlson here, and I think it's pretty clear. It's interesting what he has
really
to say.
Tucker.
Here, this is
capitalism should not be anywhere near Christianity.
You think
Christianity and is socialism?
Okay.
Yeah. Now he goes into the explanation. I'm gonna let him explain.
First of all, let's define what socialism is. Socialism is an economic system which abolishes the private ownership of the means of production. What does that mean? It means you're not allowed to own anything that you could actually turn into a company or use to produce or make things. What's capitalism? Capitalism, an economic system that allows for the private ownership of the means of production, or essentially the sort of world that Tucker Carlson likes to live in. Because last time I checked, Tucker's not offering to hand over his whole network to the government to manage for him. This idea that Christianity is inherently socialist is absurd. This guy refers to one passage in Acts where they talked about living and sharing everything in common. This is a very unique time in early church history where they were being persecuted. If you look at, the entire rest of the context of the scripture, you will most obviously not come to the conclusion that Jesus was a Marxist. But Tucker here seems to think like, like, really, Tucker? Let me just tell you something. If I was on the left and I wanted to create a subversive element on the right, it would look a lot like you at this point as you run around talking about, well, I don't see the problem with Sharia law and, you know, socialism. Yeah, it's inherently Christian. And okay, Tucker, if you really believe all this, great. Then go live under Sharia law where you will not be allowed to practice your Christian faith and then hand over your network to the government to manage.
Yeah, okay, see, he's going down the exact road I would have gone down saying all this stuff. And Tucker has come out and said Sharia law has made countries better or more productive than the United States. He's come out and said some of these things. I do not understand. I don't get it. I just don't get it. It's just, where is he coming up with this stuff? What do I have? It looks like everybody's got their putting apps. There's a YouTube app now you can have on your desktop. I don't know if I want to go down that road. The problem is that Tucker, Megyn Kelly, a lot of these people who are now Tucker has basically come out and said, I'm sorry that I have to apologize for promoting this guy and. I mean, he's literally gone down. He's sliding right off the side of the. And I don't understand why. I don't know if he's getting. It's just bizarre. It's a bizarre thing. For somebody who had been so boldly, apparently, supposedly conservative. I have always had a little. There's always been this little thing that's been kind of a troublesome thing every time I've. Thought about Tucker Carlson, especially his laugh. There's certain things that he says and the way he says them that to me, have always had a question about phoniness, and this Megyn Kelly's same way. There's a certain phoniness about Megyn Kelly. Now, some people argue with me about that. That they're, oh no, she's as genuine can be. That's what she portrays. She portrays this Joe Sixpack thing, and it's. I'm not saying that you're a fool. I'm saying that you can be fooled by that. Now, there's also, there's this folk phony or fake phony outrage about certain things, and they'll be upset about something because they know that it might strike a chord with some people. Alex Jones, same thing. He has always worked on the fringe. He's always been one of those people who are out there on the edge, and he kind of draws people into that. It's, you know, Mark Dice, in my opinion, I have appreciated things that Mark Dice has done in the past, but at the same time, again, there's some things that cause me to bristle a little bit against that. That's where he's at, and there's some certain things he says that's kind of a little bit off the edge. He's not right about everything, and and there's some very serious things he's not right about. But that's the point. Anyway, that's where I'm at with all this stuff. I've kind of gone kind of long here, I guess, haven't I? Let's just take a little break. I think we'll just take a little break here. Well, in fact, let's listen to this little ditty about the. Well, you'll see.
Five, seven, four.
But wait, there's more.
6-5-1. We're almost done. 7-6-85. Text that number. It's alive. Text that number. Call that number. Don't be a loser.
Yeah. Text that number. It's 574-651-7685. Call or text that number. You can also do google.com/voice. Type that number in, and you can leave a message, or you can do it. I do get a lot of messages, by the way. I get a lot of messages and a lot of phone calls from, people that want to collect bills from some guy named Timothy. I don't know who this guy is. If you're Timothy and you had that number before, you might want to have somebody get a hold of you. What they do is they cycle these numbers through, so anybody that like cancels their thing, then you get number comes available. Anyway, so I get all this stuff for lending agencies, all kinds of stuff that comes through all the time. I don't always check all the stuff, but there's a lot of junk. Let's just say spam comes through that number all the time, probably because I put it on the show. But call or text that number if you live outside the country and you don't have an international plan. You can just do that through google.com/voice, or you can actually literally just text that number. Or call that number and leave a message, and maybe I'll play that voicemail over the phone, or over the show. You never know. If it meets my approval. So that's all I got to say about that. So it is Friday. Shabbat Shalom. By the way, we're entering into the weekend here, and next week there will be a show. Guess what? Every day next week. The only day that we may have an issue. What is this? See, it's what is when is this? I think it's the second. On a Saturday? I can't remember what the dates are here. Yeah. So we will actually have a show every day next week, I believe. Let's look at the calendar here just to make sure. Open time window. Oh yeah, I got to do that. That's just a thing online. There's nothing. So flea and tick. We got to get the flea and tick stuff for the dogs, dogs and the cats and. There's nothing. Oh yeah, nothing there. Nothing at all. I'll be able to have a show every day next week. Granted that I don't end up on the boat for an overnight. I might end up actually going to the boat for an overnight. I just got a lot of work to do on the thing, and I might end up staying up there for one night. I'm not sure that's going to work real well. That may not happen, but we're going to see how it goes. Got to get some things done up there. As a matter of fact, I was thinking about going up there this weekend, possibly, instead of spending that much time on it. Anyway, that's the plan. We have some things like that coming up. But so let's do this, and we'll talk about what's going to be on Monday's show.
It's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, oh, it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, oh, it's the news.
It's the news.
According to me, it's the news.
It's the news.
Yeah. According to me.
So next week, Mishmash Monday, there's a lot of things that have been going on with the world. We'll talk a little bit about Iran, what's happened there, some of the things that you're being told over the legacy media and what's actually happening. And we're also going to talk a little bit about, all this other stuff that's been going on. I'm probably going to have time to get some clips together for next week. I got some stuff I got to finish up for this. This whole week has been kind of revolving around what's happening this evening. And then what we're going to do is tomorrow, Monday, I'll have some things lined up and kind of get back to a regular, show kind of thing. I got some other projects I'm working on, but nothing that's stressful like this evening is. It's kind of a stressful time for getting all that done, pulling all together, making it work. So that's what's happening. Next week, normal schedule. We'll have Monday, Mishmash Monday, Technical Tuesday. Probably going to talk about AI stuff. Wednesday, who knows what. Probably going to be a live show. Thursday, again, and then Friday, Financial Friday. We're going to have some other stuff. In the meantime, folks, God bless. Have a great weekend. Shabbat Shalom. And I guess all that leaves is just for me to say this last thing, which is just, see ya.